Welcome to the Unfiltered Podcast with me, Joe Warner, and powered by Ultimate Performance, the world's premier personal training experience that delivers maximum results in minimum time. In each episode of the Unfiltered Podcast, I interview the most respected, celebrated, and controversial experts in the fields of health, fitness, nutrition, well-being, and performance to help you find the life-changing advice you need to live smarter. Remember, you can find all of our exclusive Unfiltered documentaries, video interviews, and investigations at unfilteredonline.com and the Unfiltered Extra YouTube channel. And now, on with the show. Social media has been the preeminent way of people getting fitness information for a little while now, right, Jay? And I guess when you and I started out at the beginning of our careers, it was magazines and even websites were kind of in their infancy. And we've seen a huge swing towards first social media and now podcasts. This democratization of getting fitness information across, there's pros and there's cons. I'd love your overall take on where you think the needle is in terms of positivity or negativity that the entire fitness media landscape has changed beyond recognition over the last, 10, 15 years?
Yeah, very much so. I mean, I could literally speak all day about this because, you know, personally, just the transformation of social media has been phenomenal. You know, in the last kind of 4 or 5 years, I always laugh at it because I was kind of one of the OGs back kind of 10, 11 years ago when there wasn't really anything going on Instagram. TikTok didn't even exist. And it was just Twitter and Facebook. And that was it. And the way that very much the fitness industry and social media was about was kind of me. Watch my journey. Watch what I'm doing. And it was great for me at the time because it was really good accountability. And I very much used social media as my kind of therapy and also my routines. And, you know, if I put something out on there, the chances are I'd do it. And I very much use social media documenting my journey and getting people to follow me. And, you know, it seemed to be all about me. And I kind of cringe now when I look back at like 5, 6 years ago, because a lot of my posts were about, look what I'm doing. And I look at my content now and it's got nothing to do with me whatsoever. It's everything to do with everybody else. And it's kind of interesting because I've had my biggest growth on social media in the last couple of years. And it's because it's been very much focused on helping other people and seeing what people's problems are and focusing on them, not myself. So yeah, that's a massive change that I've seen through social media. Another thing that I've seen, which has changed massively, is attention. Now, 3 or 4 years ago, the guidelines from Facebook and a lot of other platforms were make sure that your videos are at least 5 minutes long. And now it's make sure that your videos are less than 30 seconds. So it's very, very interesting now that people are very much consuming multiple things. They're going very kind of narrow and not very deep. Now, a lot of people can complain about that. A lot of people can say, well, you know, I'm going to put really deep stuff out. I'm going to put long form stuff out. And the reality is on certain platforms, at this moment in time, it's just not going to work. Because people will flick. People's attention spans are very short on certain platforms. And this is what I say to a lot of people. When it comes to short form video content, which is basically content which is, you know, less than a minute long, the aim of that is to educate and entertain, but not really change somebody's life. What you're trying to do with that piece of content is get people to like you, get people to trust you, and then potentially go and search out for your longer form content. And from that, you're looking at YouTube, podcasts. So then the people that, you know, suddenly have bought into you can go a lot deeper with your content. So that's, you know, from a kind of my own personal journey over the last 10 years of social media and how I've seen the landscape in the last 3 or 4 years, that's why I've seen the changes.
Was it a very conscious decision to stop talking about yourself and talk about your viewer, or was it an organic process? Talk me through that process of how you kind of switched from being internal to external.
Yeah, I think very much so that just the way that I used social media changed. So when I was kind of younger, I used to very much use it to document everything. everything I ate, everything that I did, I couldn't go anywhere without getting my phone out, telling people what I'm doing and what I'm up to. And now it's just completely opposite. I have more of a private life. I enjoy not being on social media. I very much enjoy social media and enjoy creating the content, but I don't necessarily document my entire world and existence now like I used to. So for me, social media has become a lot easier because I'm not thinking about, oh, I need to make sure that I'm taking my tripod to the gym and filming my workout. For me, I have this studio now, so a lot of my work is during the day creating the content and then closing the door on it and going home, which is fantastic now. So I've got a much better balance of it these days. So, but that, as you said, with regards to going from kind of the internal to external, I just think, I don't think that social media has changed from going, right, now you need to just focus on others, not yourself. Because once again, it depends on what it is that you are documenting. It depends on who you are and depends what it is that you're doing. Because people are very intrigued and interested by other people's lives. But it's just been a natural kind of progression into just focusing more on other people. And it's been really big in the last kind of couple of years because I started going backwards on social media at the end of 2021, where I kept losing followers despite posting three times a day. And with any kind of consistency with that, you kind of get a bit frustrated because you're putting all of this work in and have been for the last kind of 8 or 9 years, and then suddenly it's kind of going backwards. And one of the main realizations for me was that I was just trying to be everything to everyone. I was trying to be funny. I was trying to give people nutrition and fitness tips. I was trying to do memes. I was trying to do updates. And it's very confusing to an individual. And one thing that I found that people are like is that you only follow other people for certain things. So you follow that person for their interior design. You follow that person for their humor. You follow that person for their motivational stuff. And I just made a decision to go, what do you like doing the most, Jay? And I said, I love talking about mindset. I love talking about, the transformation starts from the neck up and get this right and then everything else follows. And I just said to myself, just do that. And the minute I made a decision just to go very narrow and focus, I think in that period of time between the beginning of 2022 to now, it's amassed about 750,000 followers. So going narrower, going deeper and keeping consistent with a theme of something has been massive for me.
With attention spans, as you said previously, being massively shortened, it is all about catching someone's attention, right? And trying to get them on your journey so you can then direct them, as you said, to longer form content. The trouble with that, especially with TikTok, with Instagram, the algorithm seems to reward the controversial content, the dogmatic content, the shocking content. How do you position yourself in a world where often the biggest voice, the loudest voice gets heard, when often the message might not be something that you agree with from your own ethical or moral point?
It's a lot more difficult journey. I mean, from an actual consumer, it's very natural to gravitate towards drama, things that are polarizing, and we focus a lot of attention on it. It's this kind of 99-1 principle where if you do a post and you get 99 positive comments and then you get one negative, you'll focus 99% of your energy on that negative one. So a lot of people who understand social media very much geared towards getting attention. And that will always be the case because it works. But one thing that I find a lot, especially with a lot of younger YouTubers, especially with a lot of people who go down that route, they haven't stopped to consider their own purpose for why they're doing it. Are they really, is all they care about getting views and building followers, or are they actually caring about actually wanting to change people's lives, make people's lives better, and create an impact with your content that is usable? And I think a big thing that has grown a lot over the years of what's happened is mental health and anxiety and stress has become a lot, lot bigger. So as much as people are very much attracted to negative content, a lot of people who produce that negative content get very affected by it. Because if you wake up and spend all of your time pulling down others and trying to start arguments, it's only a matter of time before that has a negative impact on your life. And you see a lot of content creators who disappear off the face of the earth after getting a massive following, or they disappear for 6 months and they come back and they go, I'm sorry, I had to take a mental health break. So the question that I always ask myself is that if you're going to be in this game of social media for a long time, you know, I really started posting consistent content in 2011. So I'm 12 years in. How do I stay for another 20 years? You just want to be mindful of the stuff that you are posting, because does my content get a lot more likes and views than maybe something more controversial? No. But in the longer term, next 10 to 20 years, it will do, because I won't be going anywhere. Because what happens when I post my content is it gives me energy. What happens when I post my content is I don't get many people arguing. What happens when I post my content is actually it leaves people better when they find it. So for me, social media is a definite long game, and really understanding what the purpose is behind it. Because I will always attribute social media to my success because of the opportunities that I've had in my life, and I'm very grateful for it. And it's such an incredible thing to have, and everybody's got it in their pocket. They just don't use it the right way that they should.
With anxiety, depression, other mental health issues at the forefront, there's tons of research saying that, you know, the younger generation coming through are massively affected by this. And social media inevitably has had a part to play in that by projecting these perfect lives and maybe a bit of a disconnect between what people are seeing and what's actually going on. So my question is twofold, Jay, if that's okay. First of all, what's your advice for people who have grown a following and maybe a little bit younger and are influencers? How can they better manage their mental health being in the spotlight and dealing with a lot of criticism? And secondly, what about for the average Joe on the street using social media? What's your advice for how they can have a better experience and maybe minimize some of the negative mental health issues that do crop up from social?
I think the first thing is that a lot of people allow an audience and a following to get to their head, as in the more followers that they have, the more special a person that they are. And if you think like that, that is a recipe for disaster. One of the things that always makes me laugh is when people meet, they go, I can't believe how normal you are. And I'm like, as opposed to what? And I was like, it's just zeros and ones on a phone. It's like, just don't get an ego about an audience, I would say, when it comes to it. And actually, I understand that it's a very privileged position that you have, so don't let it get to your head. And also, the most important thing is, when we talk about, and from a fitness perspective, hypertrophy, there is a formula which we focus on, and it's stress plus rest equals growth. Now, the stress of creating content is the game itself, of videoing things, of filming things, of editing things, of getting things up, of, you know, speaking, DMs, all of that stuff. It's a very stressful thing. But without the adequate amounts of rest, you're not going to have sustainable growth. So be mindful of your habits. And there's some very simple things which I've done over the years. No social media after 8 p.m. Very simple thing to have. Nothing good on social media happens after 8 p.m. And it's a time when you're the most triggered, because your willpower, your energy is most depleted, especially if you've had a busy day. So just don't go on to social media. The next thing is to not have your phone in your room. I don't have my mobile phone in my room. I charge it downstairs and I use an alarm clock. That, for me, over the last 3 years, has just been a massive game changer, because I get more sleep. I don't have a phone by my bed. I don't check it as much. And that's the habits that I was getting into, which made me go, I need to, you know, leave this downstairs. So one of the things that you need to do is build up a positive relationship with the rest part of this journey if you want continual growth for the next 10 years. For the average consumer, I would say the most important thing to understand about social media is, a lot of people try and understand what the algorithms do, and what the algorithms are there for are to feed you more of the things which you're watching. Now, if you're not in a good mental space, you tend to look at more, you know, more things that trigger you and potentially more things that are not going to help with what it is that you're experiencing right now. So you need to filter your news feeds. You need to have a relationship with social media that's conscious. So don't just scroll. Have an intention for why you're going on social media. So I'm going on TikTok to have a look for 5-10 minutes. At the same time, that consciousness is about going, if you're getting angry and jumping on your phone for 10 to 15 minutes and it's wound you up, you need to ask yourself why you're so wound up. And a lot of the time it will be because you're following the wrong types of people. And this is so important. A lot of people say, how do you deal with all the drama on social media? And my response is, what drama? I don't see any. And the reason that I don't see any is the minute that I see something that I don't like or has triggered me or will distract me from doing my work, I'm very mindful to make sure that I've muted, unfollowed, and let the algorithm and the platform know to not show me this again. So when I'm scrolling my newsfeed, it's amazing. Because I'm following the people that lift me up, don't distract me or tear me down. And it's a positive experience. Now, one thing I will say, and a lot of people say to me, is it's easier said than done. But everything that's worth anything in life is easier said than done.
There's been a lot of controversy on social media with influencers. How to put this diplomatically, maybe not in telling the entire truth of their audience. And the Liver King has been the most highest profile case recently in terms of insisting it was natural. And then it's come to light that it was clearly using a significant number of performance enhancing drugs to sell products, to sell a lifestyle, ultimately to monetize his audience. Where's your line in the sand, Jay, in terms of where you think is acceptable, you know, in terms of what you're telling your audience and, you know, you mentioned things that make your blood boil. Where's the things that really aggravate you and where is that line in the sand?
For me, you know, I was a British Army soldier for almost 7 years. So integrity is a massive part of what it is that I do. And actually, a good friend of mine, Al Barrett, who recently sold Grenade for $350 million to Cadbury's, he said a great thing and he said, integrity is expensive. And I love that because what he means by that is he's had over the last kind of decade abundance of opportunities to make a quick buck and he's turned it all down, probably millions, for that integrity. And I love that because I probably lost out on so much cash over the last decade from saying no to things that don't fall in line with what it is that I'm about. But at the same time, that's also why I'm still here kind of 10, 12 years later and still thriving. Because I think it's so, so important to be honest with people. And it enables me to sleep very well at night. It enables me to build a loyal, engaged audience and enables me to enjoy what it is that I'm doing. So integrity is super, super important when you are in this game and you will get incredible opportunities to work with companies. But at the same time, you kind of need to ask yourself, you know, for me, it's simple. If I am pushing a product, do I use it? If I'm pushing a product, you know, is it good? Is it the best that I can give my audience? And if the answer is no, then you know, personally, I don't work with them. But also at the same time, you know, if I see somebody pushing something that I think is kind of immoral, they'll get a mute or unfollow from me. And that's what I recommend a lot of people do. A lot of people just get caught up in arguments and everything else. But you just got to understand that the amount of exposure that you have to people, which if we didn't have social media, you would never meet in your entire life. It's just incredible. And yet you're getting riled up and arguing with these strangers on the internet.
And you never feel a need to call anything out, anything you see that is truly scandalous or really does make your blood boil. Have there ever been moments where you felt the need to call out or started to do something? And in that moment, how have you taken a step back?
I don't really call anything out. It's not my style anymore. I used to a lot. I used to a hell of a lot. And I think the same thing with social media. If you look for things, you'll end up finding them. If you look for drama, you'll find drama. If you look for annoying people, you'll find annoying people. And you will end up wasting a lot of time, because the minute that you have spent best part of half a day calling someone out or something out, someone else will pop up. And you don't need to have be this person going out trying to save the world of idiots, because there's plenty of them on the internet. So for me, I had a simple mission for my content from when I changed it, and it's to leave people better when they find a piece of content. So I'm always very mindful of this when I post something. You know, for example, if I was to call something out or to talk something down or to have that kind of polarizing thing, I'm like, would this make someone feel better, happier, healthier, or would that it make them feel angrier kind of or worse? And if it's angrier or worse, then I just don't bother anymore. And that's been really good for my own mental health. And of course, it's been really good for my audience too, because they know what they're going to get with me. And actually, that's helped with my growth, because I think I've forgotten who said it, but there was a quote that said, people might forget what you said, but they'll never forget the way you make them feel. And it's a very simple kind of thought process then, that if your content makes people feel good, they'll always go out and search for it.
As someone who's made such a big name for themselves on social, does it upset you that so many people who are engaging and using social aren't happy and it's making them unhappy? You've obviously outlined some things that content creators can do to protect their mental health and other things that users can do. But do you see that a role the platforms themselves have? Do they have an obligation to take some steps to make the entire social media experience more prone to happiness rather than sadness?
It's as I said, it's a very difficult thing, because, and someone said to me before, you know, is it the responsibility of these platforms? And I think that you need to take your own responsibility for these things. As I said, the algorithm is a very intelligent thing, and it's trying to show you more of the things which it thinks you like. And if you keep looking at polarizing, dramatic, argumentative, negative stuff, it's just going to feed you more of those things, because all it's trying, you know, it's going to be very hard for an algorithm to really go, oh, hang on a minute, I'm not going to show more of this stuff that this person's watching. So when you understand that, it's like, well, shouldn't the person that is consuming it have a responsibility for that? Now, there's many different categories for this as well, because of course I have a 9-year-old daughter who's very active and looking at TikTok, and I'm very mindful of the things which she looks at and consumes as well. So it's a very difficult discussion to have about what the responsibility is, because once again, for my daughter, I believe the responsibility is mine of what it is that she's watching, and to educate her on, you know, on social media and why people do certain things and how it all works. So for me, the responsibility very much falls down to the consumer. But I do believe that there's a lot of platforms doing a better job now than they used to. Instagram are informing people a lot better, reminding people that there are certain features which you can switch on to help with certain things. TikTok is very, very good at being, you know, mindful of certain things. And that's one thing that I have liked about TikTok, is that they are, you know, on the ball with a lot of things like that. But as with anything, you know, the more filters and that you put in, the more ways there are of people to slip through the net. And sometimes the more difficult it is to get your message out, even if it is positive.
for you, social media has obviously been a huge opportunity to increase your reach and fundamentally to do what you love doing and helping people. But I know a lot of influencers who feel like they're on this treadmill that is constantly accelerating because there's always someone else putting out new content, the demands on your time, that pressure you can put on yourself and coming from your audience to constantly do things differently, to do things new, to be innovative. Do you find it exhausting? You sound like you've got a very nice balanced way of dealing with it, but does it ever get you down? Just that constant, almost on that treadmill of having to deliver?
I think it's finding systems of doing stuff and understanding that, you know, if you are creative, if you enjoy this thing, you do need to protect your energy and creativity at all costs, because it is there is a battery on it which drains down. And that comes down to building your relationship with the platform. Now, there are different ways that you can do that. I mean, last year, my biggest growth came from 5 live streams. Now, I was going to say, you might think, well, how did that happen? Well, what I used to do and still do is I go live on Instagram and I talk for 45 minutes. And what I'll do is I'll take that 45-minute video and I'll break it down into 15 to 30-second reels. From a 45-minute video, I will have 40 to 50 videos. And that is essentially 5 weeks' worth of content for me to post every day. Now, the beautiful thing about nearly all platforms now is you can schedule that content. Mm-hmm. So for me, that's all I did last year. I was able to produce consistent quality content by having a system in place, which meant I didn't need to be on there posting, thinking, creating, and all the time. So there are ways around it. And especially, as I said, with social media now, the things that are working are 15 to 30 seconds, which means you don't have to put that much effort into the videos and that to get views, to build your audience. In fact, social media has become so much easier than it used to be when it comes to being consistent, because as I said when we started, a 3 to 5 minute video is a lot more difficult to create daily than a 30-second one.
What's been the biggest sacrifice that you've had to make to have the success you've had in both life and, I guess, the fitness industry? Is there anything that you can articulate as being something that is still kind of a source of, that was a really hard thing to go through to do what I've had to do?
Yeah, I mean, I had a bit of a meltdown 2016 where I was just trying to do it all. I was trying to get back to every message. I was trying to get back to every person. I'd be spending 30, 40 minutes chatting to people, you know, complete strangers on the internet, and not spending any time with my family. And it kind of broke me back then. And in order to fix myself, I had to literally balance the other way by just extracting myself from social media, not getting back to every message and email. So sometimes, as much as you say to people not to do these things, they have to experience that these things to themselves so they can find that balance. And balance is usually created by understanding both extremes, too much and too little. You know, too little social media, you're not going to build a business and a brand and yourself, and too much social media, you're going to end up like me. So the sacrifices that I made kind of back then were more mistakes. And now I'm a lot clearer on what I'm not willing to sacrifice. And this works very, very well with my schedule and routine. And what I'm not willing to sacrifice now is evenings, so I can spend time with my family and my wife. Weekends, so I can spend time with my family and wife. So if anybody asks for requests of my time, even if the opportunity is amazing, the answer is no. And having those boundaries in place allows me to have that kind of work-life balance that people have. And once again, this is the beautiful thing about social media, is the ability to schedule things, the ability to plan things out, and the ability to choose your own hours. I mean, that's one thing that's been incredible for me, having an audience, is, you know, I'm the boss. I choose when I turn up and not turn up, as long as I, for me, show up every day and put something good out into the world.
You've been incredibly open and honest about the importance of transparency and authenticity before. How difficult was it initially to speak out about the mental health issues you've had? Because I think it's something in this day and age, a lot of men, maybe particularly British men, still struggle to open up. Can you talk, if you're okay with doing so, Jay, a little bit about that process and how you managed to actually speak to people, you know, people you didn't even know about some of the issues you'd faced?
Yeah, for me, it was very difficult because, as I said, as being a British Army soldier, you know, I was in Iraq for 6 months. I was exhausted, sleep deprived, you know, bombs coming down left, right, and center. But everyone around you is going through the same. And no one really felt at that time, I think this was 2008, that they could tell anybody that they had an issue. It was just a case of get on with it. And when I left the army, it was still that case. You know, I had a perspective of coming from a military background into this civilian background. And I was like, cool, this is easy. You know, so because this is easy, I was working 7 days a week. I was up at 4 a.m., not finishing till like 11 o'clock at night. And because I was loving what I was doing, and it just created a massive amount of burnout. And firstly, I wish that there was more people speaking about it, because that would have allowed me to understand. And I think as well, this is the most important kind of message, especially with mental health, is that you know, asking for help is a sign of strength, not weakness. It blew my mind that 87 men commit suicide every single week in the UK. Yeah, and a lot of those could be prevented by just asking for help. And it's okay not to be okay. We all go through peaks and troughs. We all go through difficult times. And those times become so much better when you talk about them. Because actually what happens when you speak about these things, you'll find that a lot of people around you turn around and go, thank God I'm not the only one. Because they were just too afraid to speak about it. And like anything, you know, as random as it is to say, whenever I do a talk on stage and I ask if anybody has a question, nobody puts their hand up until that first person does. And the minute that they do, everybody else does. So I take it very much upon myself to be that first person putting their hand up to allow others and show others that it's okay to put their hand up too.
People who've been through particularly difficult times will often speak of, you know, rock bottom, a moment where they realized something had to be done. Did you have a moment like that? And if so, what were the steps you took to manage to begin to find your way out of it?
Yeah, I mean, my kind of rock bottom moment was kind of 2017. I'd moved out. I'd temporarily split from my wife, moved out, got a flat, and I was sitting on this empty floor in this flat and just asked myself, what happened? You know, everything was going so well with me. You know, I had one of the most successful years ever, and I was completely lost. And it's very, very hard to really kind of sit there and feel that a month before I ticked every single box that I'd ever wanted to tick when it came to success. So why am I sitting on this floor? And it's just realizing for me what it's all for. You know, if you are on social media, if you are producing content, what's it all for? Who's it all for? And these are very important questions to ask yourself, because then you'll be able to balance your life so much better. Having a purpose, having a why behind it, and having a reason. And the where I messed up was my thought process for social media and everything was, I'm going to work really hard for the next 10 years so I'll never have to work again. And the trouble that I see with a lot of people who work hard and, you know, envision this idea of success is that they think that if they just do that for 10 years, then they can retire, they can be successful, whatever that is as a definition. But if you do actually achieve that, you'll get 10 years down, you might have this, you know, financial or whatever success you have, and you won't have anyone to share it with. Because the whole point of you doing all of this is happiness and fulfillment. And I realized that I was doing all of this for the people that I cared about and people that I loved. Yet I was spending zero time with them whatsoever. And that was a massive change for me.
Was it a sudden realization? Because you know, again, from the outside, someone seeing you on social, the success, the amazing physique, all the achievements, as you said yourself, you hit off, you ticked off all of the targets you had. Yet the disconnect between what someone on their phone would see and then you seeing on the floor of an empty flat is stark. It's was it a sudden realization? How did that process happen?
Yeah, so it was a sudden realization. I think, you know, like I get very reflective in December. And in 2016, yeah, I had a very successful year. I just built a brand new gym facility, just written a best-selling book. I was had number one podcast in the UK in the health category. And I just broke a world record and raised tens of thousands of pounds for charity. And my December is always a reflection of going, I was walking on a cloud going, you've done everything that you set out to do. And then had this emptiness of going, there's something missing. And it was a sacrifice that I made that year to do it. I didn't spend any time with my wife and my daughter, who was three at the time. I probably didn't really acknowledge her for that year either. I was there, but I wasn't there. So, as in, I could see her, but I was on my phone or in my phone or thinking about my phone or thinking about social media. And that's where that kind of realization of just how much I've messed up, because I think this thought process was me as going, if I want this journey of success with what it is that I'm doing, it has to be like this. So I have to make the sacrifice of maybe not spending as much time with my family. And that's what caused the decision to kind of move out. And then this realization of going, no, that didn't fix it. That made it worse. And it's realization of saying to myself, no, it's not that you need to make these sacrifices in order to succeed. It's the fact that the way that you're doing it is completely wrong. And it took me a good kind of 2 to 3 years to kind of get that back. And 2019 was a really great year for me, because I pretty much ticked every box that I ticked in 2016 with regards to building a new business, writing a new book. I broke a Guinness World Record and raised about 25,000 for charity. The difference was I had evenings off, I had weekends off, and at the end of December, I spent 3 weeks in Australia with my family, which was great timing because something really bad happened the next year. So what happened is I proved to myself that it was just the fact that I needed to figure out how to do this correctly. And by the end of that year, I proved to myself that it wasn't a case of how hard you worked. It was a case of going, what you did, you know, for me, I always say it's the funniest thing that I used to say to people is if you, and it's, I think it was taken from an Arnold Schwarzenegger quote. And it's like, if you sleep 2 hours less a day, you'll get an extra month awake a year to get things done. But what good's an extra month awake if you're, what good's an extra month awake if you're absolutely exhausted? Because it's not about how much time you're up doing stuff. It's about how productive and energetic you are in that time whilst you're up. And a Jay that has 7 to 8 hours sleep gets so much more done in the day than a Jay that only gets 3 or 4 hours.
In rebuilding your relationships and rebuilding your non-social media life, how were you able to do that? Was that something you were able to do by yourself, or was it something where you did need help and guidance?
I think I went to some extreme measures, and what I used to do and kind of still do is just building the relationship back with social media. So one of the things that I did is very much got into the habit of switching my phone off. And I actually, for a year, had two phones. I bought one of the worst phones you could ever think of on Amazon. It was one of these, it was hilarious. I think it was like a Lamborghini phone. They're about 20, 25 quid. They flip up and they make these revving sounds, and you basically just stick a SIM card in it, charge it, and the phone's good for about 5 days of battery. And I used to swap my iPhone with that. And that was great because I could still ring people and talk to people. But when I had that itch to go on into my pocket and check something on, I just look at this really naff car phone. And it was this realization that, okay, cool. The thing that I was wanting to do a minute ago, it doesn't really matter. So a lot of it was making more conscious actions to change kind of subconscious habits, which I'd built up over many years.
Coming out of that process and trying to kind of rebuild your life, if that's not too strong a term, I'm really interested in kind of your daily non-negotiables. Do you have, you know, you've talked about your social media routine in the evenings. Are there any other rituals, daily routines that you have in place now to ensure that your mental health is fully taken care of to the best extent you can?
So I've got quite a big morning routine, and I very much focus on kind of filling up my vessel before I serve others. And my morning is very much focused on stretching, breath work. I do a lot of cold water. I've got a cold water plunge tank in my garden, so I enjoy that. And I go to the gym and get a workout in, and then I pretty much from there start my day. I get up very early, ex-soldier, so it's quite easy for me to get up early. And because I have a 10-year-old and a 3-year-old, if they're awake, I literally cannot get anything done. So for me, the day starts at 4:30 a.m. Get all of my stuff out of the way, back for breakfast to watch the kids go to school and that, and then I start my day. But at the same time, I do make sure I get, you know, seven and a half hours sleep. So my bedtime is 9 p.m. So I do go to sleep at 9. Maybe extended a bit more on the weekends, and maybe up maybe 5:30, 6 o'clock on the weekends. But normally on a working Monday to Friday, that's kind of my routine. And that's been such a massive game changer for me, because my brain is like a creative sponge in the morning. I am definitely a morning person. I get kind of very creative in the morning, and I absorb the most information when my brain's fresh. So I've got to be really mindful of what information I absorb. And a lot of that time in the morning is spent stretching, reading, journaling, and kind of planning out my day, or even writing.
You're obviously an incredibly positive person. You don't need to engage with you on social media for too long to realize that. I'm interested, just with all of the troubles you've been through, trying to see a positive through that. Do you feel those experiences have made you a much better communicator now to help people? In a sense, did you kind of have to go through that process to be where you are now?
Yeah, I think very much so. I mean, it's given me a massive perspective on what actually matters in my life. And I've had big periods of time where I've, you know, had an immense amount of gratitude. And a lot of that came from my military background. I joined the army at 17, away on operations in my 20s, away from my family. And that gives you a massive perspective as well, because it makes you realize of just what matters in life, you know, and it is the people close to you, it is your family and friends, and it is doing fulfilling work as well. And once again, when that's in front of you all the time, you sometimes take it for granted. And this is why it's so important just to spend a little bit of time consciously. I always say waking up kind of smelling the flowers and going, you know, reminding yourself, yeah, life's not that bad. We've got some good things going on here. And for me, yeah, I'm very much saying to myself, look, I've got everything I need, and anything else is a bonus. And then that allows me to enjoy what it is that I'm doing, to put good stuff out in the world, and to sleep well at night, because I can wait.
Sorry, Jeff, I'm gone.
I wake up with that thought process of not desiring or wanting anything. A great guy, Naval Ravikant, he said, desire is a contract that you make with yourself to be unhappy until you get what you want. And, you know, thinking back to the last 10 years, a lot of my success has come down to a level of unhappiness and desiring things that I want. But at the same time, once I've achieved those things, I've realized that they weren't the things that I wanted to, you know, they didn't tick the box, so to speak. They didn't scratch the itch, because then I just wanted more stuff. And actually coming from a place of happiness and fulfillment and going, you know, I've got everything I need. I'm good. But we need a purpose and drive and a reason to get up in the morning. And what better reason than to make other people's lives happier?
And as someone who spends your working life doing just that, trying to help people improve their mindset, improve their mental health, you've obviously got to be incredibly patient. But as someone who has served in the military and obviously been through a lot of hardship and tough times, do you ever want to shake people and say, come on, guys, like, we live in an amazing country with tons of opportunity. We've got a roof over our head. There's food in the cupboard. Do you ever feel like we just need to pull ourselves together and just get on with it?
I think a lot of people need to come up with their own. I mean, it's easy for me to say that because of the perspective that I've had. I have been in, you know, a lot of war-torn countries to have that perspective, which a lot of people haven't. And one thing that I would say to people is, if you haven't done already, to go and travel. If you want to get a better perspective of just how lucky and fortunate you are to be in the position that you are, go and experience other cultures and other countries as well, because it will open up your eyes and it will bring you back with this sense of, you know, fulfillment. You know, I worked in Somalia for best part of 3 or 4 months, and more people were grateful and happy and smiling there, having been in a war-torn country and having nothing, than when I landed in Gatwick and everyone's annoyed because they've only got 10% left on their phone. So a lot of it is gaining that perspective. And, you know, it's all very well kind of shaking people, but something that I would say is that you can't strong wind people. And there's this Aesop's fable of the strong wind and the sun, and it's a competition between the wind and the sun as to who is the strongest, and they obviously competed with each other to take this guy's cloak off, and the wind blew really strong, and no matter how hard he tried to take the guy's cloak off, he just held on to it. And when it was the sun's turn, he just shone. And that person decided to take the cloak off themselves. And I very much look at social media like that. You can't tell people what to do. It's much better to show them a life that they can live by just displaying it yourself. And that will incentivize people to make those changes.
We've spoken about balance, the importance of family. I think for so many young guys, especially in the fitness industry, it's competitive. You want to get ahead. It's about how you look. It's about how you behave. And sometimes we often lose perspective. And I'm just wondering now, you know, a little bit older, a little bit wiser, shifted away from kind of the body comp more towards the mindset. Has there been anything you think that's so obvious, but I wasn't ready to know that lesson when I was 20, when I was 22?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of people ask me, what would you tell your 20-year-old self? And I said, you know, there's two things. You're loved and you're good enough. And at that time, at that young age, you don't really care about love too much or being loved, because, you know, you're struggling with loving yourself. And you don't think you're good enough because you haven't achieved anything yet. And I think, you know, I'm in a better position now to say that you're good enough because of the things which I've made commitments to do and the achievements that I have. But a lot of them aren't necessarily like records and, you know, achievements and trophies and stuff. A lot of it is really down to a thumbs up to myself to say, you said you were going to do something and you did it. So if there's one thing that I would say to a younger person, it's have goals, make commitments to do them. And that's where you'll build up a lot of your self-esteem and self-confidence as a person who says that they're going to do something and does it. It's going to work very, very well for you and your success with others. And it's going to work very well for your mental health and your relationship with yourself too.
If you're being totally open and honest with yourself, what would you say, Jay, is your biggest strength? And on the flip side, what's your biggest weakness? And before I let you answer that, what if I asked your best mate or your significant other to name your biggest strength and biggest weakness? What would there be any similarities there?
Yeah, I'd say that strength is also a weakness as well. It's just stubbornness is definitely something that has helped and hindered me a lot throughout the years. A good friend of mine, which you probably know, Ross Edgley, has a great quote. You know, he's a guy who swam around the entire UK, and he said, you have to be naive to start and stubborn to finish. And I think that's the same with a lot of people. You know, if you knew how hard it was to build a business, you wouldn't start. If you knew how hard it was to build a body, you probably wouldn't start. And that stubbornness has enabled me to get through things. But at the same time, that stubbornness has probably caused me more harm than good, because I haven't understood when to take my foot off the gas at times where I didn't need stubbornness. I needed a level head to realize that sometimes too much of a good thing or too much of something is bad for you?
I think for so long there was this kind of culture of always about the grind. You've got to work every hour, sacrifice sleep, sacrifice relationships. The only way you'll make it, prove how tough you are, is by kind of never, ever ducking that challenge. As someone who's been there and then realized that actually balance and other aspects of your life are so important, you, what's your advice to someone? Is, you know, obviously sacrifices have to be made to do anything in life, but balance is surely an important component that can never be neglected. I'm just trying to get where you are now on that spectrum and what advice you would give.
Yeah, for a younger person, one thing I would say is get bloody good at something. Simple as, be known for being really good at something and make sure that thing that you are focusing on is something that you love doing. And it can be absolutely anything. Something I say to a lot of people is you're rewarded in this world based on the value that you give. And you can give real value when you've made a commitment to a certain area for a long period of time that is valuable to others. That will give you a lot of confidence, and it will also give you a lot of opportunity. For me, if you look at the commitments I've made, you know, commitments since the age of 13 to my physique. I've made commitments since, you know, 2011 to social media. And, you know, I've made a commitment very much now to my content and helping people get healthier, happier, fitter, and stronger. I think there's a lot of guilt associated with not working. And I feel that a lot. I remember 2 years ago when I got my, I took myself off to a spa on a Thursday, left the wife and kids at home and took myself to a spa. And there's me sitting there Thursday afternoon in this spa, just feeling so guilty. Like, what am I doing here? You know, Anna's at home and the kids, and I'm swanning it in a spa. And then I went back to work the next day, and I had probably, without a doubt, my most productive day that I'd had. Coached people, gave them advice with their businesses and with their bodies and the brain, which just came out of nowhere and really helped a lot of people. And it just made me realize that actually I shouldn't feel guilty about resting and recovering and looking after myself, because actually when I do, it benefits so many more people than not. And that was a massive eye-opener, so much so that I literally go to that spa every single Thursday now. And I don't feel the least bit guilty in doing so. So if you are in a position where you are helping others and helping level up people, it's actually, you know, you're giving them a disservice by not. And something I say to a lot of people is, if you treated your friends and your family like you treat yourself sometimes, you wouldn't have any friends and family left.
You came to prominence through social media, as we've spoken about, with your own physique, right? Chronicling your training and your nutrition and everything that goes with it. And I think your transformation was probably one of the most insane that I've ever seen in terms of how just how lean you got. I'm really interested because I've obviously spoken to tons of fitness models, influencers, athletes, coaches, all walks of life in the fitness industry. And there seems to be a common thread that a lot of them at some point will admit to having some sort of body dysmorphia or some sort of disordered eating pattern. Because when you are paying such close attention to how you train, how you eat, how you look, quite often how you feel can take a back seat and you can get into some bad habits, in inverted commas. Can you speak openly, Jay, if that's okay, just about any issues you've had around the way you look or the way you eat? Because I think it's something that people who get into the fitness industry or take an interest in health and fitness aren't prepared for that. They're just prepared for the benefits. I'm going to look great. I'm going to be a little bit tighter on my diet, but it's all going to be good. And then bang, you can get hit by some really difficult psychological issues. Could you talk a little bit, if that's okay, about how you've dealt with that?
Yeah, I think it's understanding each individual different. I was very fortunate competing because I was very fortunate at the age of 13. I'd go in my lunch break to the gym because I was one of the naughty kids and they had a great idea that they'd allow three or four of us to let off some steam in the gym. So by the time I started competing at 24, I was already 11 years into building muscle. So for me, it was an easier journey because I had a framework and also good genetics. One of the things that I realized that I do have is very obsessive tendencies, and that I had it from a kid. I remember getting one of these Simon Says games where you press a little red button and then it, you've got to remember all the buttons. And I played it for 3 weeks and completed it on every single level. I remember getting Guitar Hero and playing it for 13 weeks straight and completing it on expert. So I do have this kind of thing of wanting to complete. If I'm passionate about something, I would just obsess over it. And for me, the next thing was bodybuilding and, you know, physique competing. I became obsessed with it, wanting to understand all the nutrition, all the training, and be the best at it. And those things did enable me to do that and achieve incredible things. But once again, it comes at a sacrifice and a cost, because that obsessiveness also equals sacrifice. So in order to get down to those very lean levels, you know, I had to literally give up my life for 8 to 10 weeks to achieve that. I had no life. My life was eating, going to the gym, and sleeping. That was it. And you ask yourself now, was that juice worth the squeeze? Well, you know, that gave me a lot of self-confidence. And I think this is one of the problems that a lot of people don't look at with regards to bodybuilding, is that they, from the outside, it looks silly. Like, why do all of that for a plastic trophy and a tub of protein? It's like, well, one of the things that so many people do that is that they have strong identities attached to their behaviors. And actually what they're doing with that is signaling to themselves that they are a confident person, that they say they're going to do something and they do it. So I know I have those obsessive tendencies, and I was very fortunate to not have any kind of dysmorphia or anything else like that. Because very much for me is, once that competition was over, it was like a switch in my head, done. What I was very fortunate in doing was in 2016, kind of switching that kind of obsessiveness to charity events. And that was a massive game changer for me, because once again, you had a date in mind, you had to do, you know, kind of go to extremes for something, you know, really extreme to do. But the beautiful thing was you could eat a lot more food, because a lot of the events I was doing, you know, I was training kind of 6-7 hours a day and you know, able to eat thousands of calories. So I was like, cool, this is so much better to do. And the beautiful thing about it as well is that the reward wasn't a title or a tub of protein or anything. It was tens of thousands of pounds to my local charity. So I was able to kind of switch this obsession into achieving something big, to have more of a positive outcome. So that's been kind of the switch over from kind of bodybuilding to challenging myself. And I think everybody needs to put something in at least once or twice a year that takes them completely out of their comfort zone. They put their name down or they do something that is just going to test them physically, mentally. Because it's such a powerful thing to do, and a lot of people don't do it, and it has incredible benefits as well.
Do you think as a society we are a little bit too comfortable at the moment? I mean, we see obesity rates going through the roof. It's never been so easy to overeat and not move. We've not even really spoken about COVID and lockdown. People are much more sedentary, just even now, several years on. Is that a risk? Do you think that we are just a bit too comfortable, and maybe that's why we're seeing increased rates of anxiety and depression and other mental health issues?
Yeah, I think as much as we are seeing an increase, we are also seeing people take action with it. And you see it a lot through social media and through myself. You know, a lot more people are focusing on things like cold water and, you know, ice baths and things like that. And once again, my whole focus is getting people to do uncomfortable, difficult things. Quote I always say is, hard things, easy life, easy things, hard life. And when you do become too comfortable, you do become lazy. And it's something that you've got to make a conscious decision to do, because there is such an abundance of information and convenience now, which is great, but also it's a massive, massive hindrance. And it's something that I'm very much focused with my kids on too. You know, I've just started jiu-jitsu about a month ago. Two reasons is, once again, it's nice to be a complete beginner and white belt of something that's physical, and that's humbling and keeps my ego very much in check, because I am the new guy there that hasn't got a clue, which is fantastic. And secondly, my son turns four this year, and it's the first thing that I'm gonna hopefully have with him to do. And you know, my aim is to make sure that he can't tap me out for the next 20 years.
I guess it must be humbling as well, because all of your years of strength training and endurance, when you move into something that's a lot more tactical, the humbling, I mean, that must be an understatement, right?
I'm a 92 kilo bodybuilder that's pretty strong, and I got choked out last week by a 72 kilo purple belt who absolutely mauled me. And that's why I love it so much, because I am back to ground zero, new person, and it's going to take me a good kind of, I've said for the first 2 years, I'm just going to be in survival mode, learning mode. And, you know, hopefully in the next kind of 10 to 15 years, I can make my way up the ranks to a black belt.
Thank you for listening to the Unfiltered podcast. If you've got this far, I hope you won't mind if I ask you to leave a 5-star review when you get the chance. We'd really appreciate it. And don't forget, you can access all of our exclusive Unfiltered video interviews and features at unfilteredonline.com and the Unfiltered Extra YouTube channel. See you next time.